Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, December 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next probably hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what I like to call our Thursday meeting show. Two professional handicappers join us. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We're going to chat college football bowl games and some NFL with Brad. We'll do bowl games as well with Rolf Michaels, then also throw in some college basketball here on today's show. Before I get into that, first off, apologies for yesterday's audio issues. We weren't able to bring Wes Reynolds onto the broadcast. We'll hear from him again next week, so I do apologize for that. Very, very frustrating, but like I said at the tail end of yesterday's show, got some new equipment here, just waiting on some cables to be shipped and all that type of stuff, so we should be improving the quality of Bang the Book Radio here very, very quickly. The content, I think, has always been outstanding. The sound quality, and of course, these ongoing Blog Talk Radio issues, something that we do need to tend to. So I just want our listeners to know that we are working towards that and working towards improving this product that we have. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of great stuff going on. My college football power ratings and all of my bowl game lines have been posted over there. Opening line reports for college football and the NFL were posted earlier this week as well. So you can see what my initial thoughts are, compare them to what we've seen out there in the betting market. Now, yesterday we heard Brian Leonard have a lot of praise for Parker Michaels, who does his daily NHL picks over there at the website. Praise was very much deserved. He's doing a great job with those, also a high success rate with those for those that are interested in that. Of course, that's all of us. So head on over to bangthebook.com, check that out. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up at DSI using the promo code BTB and the number 25. You get a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today on the program. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
Hey, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
I'm doing very well, man. It's good to get you back on the program here. And I want to start with something I asked you to read for me. I wrote up a very, very long intro. I think it was about 1,800 words or something like that in my college football power ratings piece this week, sort of evaluating what I think about power ratings based on how closely I've followed them here this season, because this is the first year that I've posted them over at bangthebook.com. I have done them for my personal handicapping and have kept them behind the curtain in the past, but actually publishing them publicly, it's something that I've spent a lot more time on this year than I have in years past. And Brad, I know that you've got some strong opinions on power ratings. There are some very strong opinions about power ratings out there in the marketplace. But the conclusion that I kind of came to is that with the nature of the industry, the increase of live betting and the game day moves that we saw this year, I sort of feel like power ratings don't hold the same importance as they have in the past.
Yeah, I mean, that's a loaded question. I think, you know, it depends on when you want to bet. If you're a guy that's able to bet Sunday World Openers like myself, I think power ratings are very important. If you're a guy like myself that, you know, when a casino like the South Point is opening up college football season win totals on all 130 teams, also, you know, early lines and stuff on Memorial Day weekend, I think power ratings are a big deal. But, you know, our power ratings, and really power ratings never have been the end-all to be-all for me. I mean, there's so many different factors for me that can override a power rating. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's still, you know, a good way to start off your handicap. Doesn't never have to be an end-all. But, you know, one thing I'll give you credit for in that whole article that I really pulled that one line that I thought was maybe the key line of the entire article. Yeah, you said full game betting is not obsolete or archaic, but it's starting to border on being an antique. I think that right there is the real struggle that maybe, you know, handicappers that have been around 20, 30 years, you know, whether it be selling picks or what, that's the issue moving forward. Because if you're not betting those opening numbers before they move, man, is it tough to win anymore if you're just giving out picks on like maybe a stale Tuesday or a Wednesday. It's just your chances of winning anymore in that kind of medium, your chances are slim to none. I mean, of course, you can have great winning seasons in that, but consistently winning year after year, it becomes tougher and tougher.
Yeah, and I appreciate that you took the time to read that, and I am trying to get some opinions from some people out there about, you know, what I wrote in that article and about, you know, my thoughts on the future of the industry. And I agree. I mean, when you talk about playing games of the year, when you talk about playing season win totals, power ratings are something that you want. I mean, otherwise you're just kind of going into it blindly and you're guessing. At least when you talk about season win totals and games of the year, if you've got your set of power ratings, you have something quantifiable to go off of. So I think that is very, very important. And that was kind of the crux of my position there, is that I think power ratings are very good for that, for season win totals and non-conference. I think they're good in the non-conference portion of the year, maybe at the start of conference play. But how many times this year did we see inconsistent teams? We could have easily had two lost teams in the college football playoff. We haven't had any to this point. And of course, we don't have any here this year as well. But I do think that, you know, the importance week to week of power ratings is starting to diminish, because I think that, you know, when you get about halfway through the season, when you're about halfway into conference play, I don't know how valuable they are anymore. I just feel like you've got so much inconsistency. You've got the gaps between these teams getting smaller at a lot of these conferences, which is something else I talked about, that I just feel like they're maybe not as much of a tool as they have been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You know, I'll go back and say this. You know, be careful overreacting to just one season. Now, I mean, college football playoffs, this is the fourth year. We've really never, you know, seen it where we could have had two lost teams. You know, be careful overreacting, like, you know, the BCS when LSU won a national championship with two losses. An outlier season. I've been publishing power ratings, obviously going back to the Phil Steele days, but me myself, you know, as far as really publishing them out there in the marketplace, it's only been the last couple of years. I've had a really good season with power ratings, and then this season I've had a really average season. So I want more data points. I want more seasons, and I'm wondering if this season, because it was a struggle for many in the industry, I get your points, and I do agree with you that, you know, on the whole, power ratings probably are of less importance as what they were in the past, because so much information is to be able to digest out there. And another thing I want to talk about is, you know, getting when to get the best number, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that here in a second. But I'm going to be old school and still say, you know, I see myself really valuing power ratings at least for the next couple of years. If I have back-to-back seasons where there's really, you know, not too much value, then I'll lessen my importance on spending a day a week, you know, updating the power ratings and go through and, you know, each and every individual play-by-play.
Yeah, that's an interesting point too, because when you look around at the NFL, and I've talked about this on the show already, everything that we thought we knew about betting the NFL has been wrong this season. Going contrarian really hasn't worked. The favorites have been covering a ton. And while it's frustrating, and in a vacuum, in a one-season sample size, you know, it makes you want to reinvent the wheel. You don't want to fall into that trap. And that's something I ran into with Major League Baseball this season, where, you know, I've had a lot of success in the past with my sabermetric handicapping. This year, things just didn't work out. And part of it was because we saw a dramatic change in Major League Baseball with so many home runs being hit. So I'm fighting an internal battle here, and sometimes I'll talk through it on the show, of trying to figure out what adjustments, how I want to adapt going into the next season. And, you know, maybe this year overall, this calendar year, maybe it's just a big outlier for the things that, you know, have worked for the guys with the sharper mindsets in the past. So I don't know, maybe you're onto something there. Maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but, you know, I still think it's good to have discussion about this, because we do need to adapt. And it's something we're going to talk about with bowl season here. You know, the way that the newer age of college football handicappers approaches the bowl season is different from what the old school guys do.
Yeah, it is. And look, let's be honest. I think you got to adapt every single year. You got to tweak stuff every year, because the market's tweaking things, trying to get better. You got to beat the market and let the casinos and stuff. It's not like they're standing pat each and every year. They're employing more people, or at least more advanced computer systems and that spit out and getting better numbers. So you always have to adapt. I don't even care if you had a 60, you know, an outlier 60-65% winning season where, you know, everything that you did just, you know, obviously worked out for you. You got to adapt, but you don't necessarily have to. What's worked so many years in the past, you know, be careful of really overreacting and trying to reinvent the wheel, because a lot of times you can over adjust and really cause yourself, you know, a couple of losing seasons in a row.
Last point I'll make here about the power ratings, and this is something you have carried over to bowl season, so I guess this is a pretty good segue here. But I noticed that one of the things that you've been doing, one of the things that you've talked about here late in the season is that, you know, you're not necessarily focused on playing games that align with your power ratings, but you're focused on playing games where you're getting value around key numbers. If you can get a 2.5 instead of a 3 early in the week where you expect a number to go to 3, possibly even 3.5, you're jumping on that line value, even though your power ratings may not suggest it is that strong of a play. Maybe your power rating number is, but because it's 2.5, you're making that play. And I think that's a very important distinction to make here as well, is that, you know, when we're talking about how tight the betting markets have gotten from a full game standpoint, you know, those half points may even be picking up more importance. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, in a lot of games, the number doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, anytime an underdog wins outright, the number is irrelevant. And you'll have favorites that win by 14 as a 3-point favorite, stuff like that. The number doesn't matter until it does. And that's why I like the approach that you've taken late in the season of, you know, grabbing what you perceive to be those half points of line value around key numbers, because I think in a market this tight, you know, maybe those are things that do grow in importance a little bit.
Absolutely, they do. I'll give you two examples of two bets I made, you know, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, even though there was only 14 or 15 college football games. You know, I go down to the win, and again, I post all my tickets. You know, USC was 3. I thought, yeah, I think that line is more likely to go to 4 than it is 2. I bet USC minus 3. They win by 3. That's a push where I would say 90% of the people that bet USC throughout the course of the week had a loss in that one. Another one that I was proud of was Memphis, plus 7.5. It was mainly 7 throughout the course of the week. You know, bad beat for almost everyone involved, the fact that the game went to overtime. But, you know, that was one where I'm sure I'm probably in the 10th percentile as far as people with Memphis tickets actually cashing them. So, and that's, again, what I did in this bowl season, just right around key numbers, 3, 7, 10, just picking off numbers. You know, one that I just posted yesterday that I thought there's no way it's coming down. It's only going to go up to 3 was LSU against Notre Dame. And at that time, it was 2.5. You know, very early on in the process, you probably could have gotten a 1, 1.5 at a low-limit place like BetOnline. But, yeah, that's exactly what I did probably the last 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season. And it's important all throughout the season, obviously, right around key numbers. But, you know, when the lines are softer the first month or so, I'm looking more for the greatest disparities between my power ranks. My power ranks, you know, very few times, maybe just a couple of games a week, am I getting, you know, huge disparities between my power ratings and the numbers. So it's all about where I anticipate the market to go and trying to get that extra half point. And you just said something really good. You know, 10% of the time, maybe the line matters. It'll fall on the line. But, man, right around a key number, to me, it's like free juice. I mean, just think about it. To get that extra half point right around a key number, you're paying more than 10%. A lot of times you're paying 15-20%. You know, 15, 20 cents on the dollar. So I like having that, at least that perceived value. And it's also, you know, it feels pretty good around a key number. Hey, I got 2.5, line's 3. It's almost like a confidence booster right around a key number, you getting the best of the number.
Now, we talked with Brian Leonard yesterday, a guy that I know both of us really respect, but he has a different approach to the bowl season in that he really hasn't looked at too many of these games. He wants to read up more on the team's motivation, doesn't want to tie up any kind of money out there with, you know, some of the risk that's attached to playing early in bowl season. We all know what that is. You know, we're going to have guys that are going to the NFL not play in these games. We're going to have guys get arrested between now and then. And, you know, I mean, we just see it every year. These guys have a little bit of downtime. They don't know what to do with it. They're trying to let loose a little bit with finals going on, all that type of stuff. They go out, do something stupid, get arrested, get suspended for the bowl game. It happens every year like clockwork. So it's really a matter of your risk profile, how much you're willing to take on, if you want to put yourself out there and play some of these numbers and run the risk of, you know, losing a couple points of line value the opposite way because a key player gets suspended or a key player like a Bradley Chubb or, you know, maybe Josh Rosen decides, I don't really want to play in this bowl game. It doesn't mean anything. I'm going to the NFL. I don't want to get hurt. You know, guys make that decision, and it's well within their right to do so, and I support pretty much every decision that's like that because – I mean, you watch a situation like Ryan Shazier on Monday night, and hey, anything can happen. You got to go out there and get that cheddar when you can. So I don't hold anything against the players that are skipping these games, but they can have an impact when it comes to the line. So somebody like Brian Leonard mentioned on yesterday's show, hasn't even looked at anything yet, wants to read up, going to play closer to game day. You, on the other hand, Brad, you told me as we were talking before the show here, you've probably played about 10 or 12 of these games already.
Yeah, just I thought there was some value in also, you know, anticipating what's going to happen. Like for instance, and out of the market, that obviously didn't agree with me, but say, for instance, I thought Florida State, there would be a chance that, like, a Derwin James, it's a lesser bowl game. They've had a disappointing season. I was reading articles at the last couple weeks of the regular season, I thought there was a good chance he'd declare. Now, a defensive player is not worth too much a line, but ask Florida State's defense last year how important Derwin James was with him in the lineup. They got a clue. Without him, they don't. So I bet Southern Miss plus 15 thinking, hey, if he's going to declare or not, I think this line goes down to 14. That's one that I made a bet on. And, you know, I probably played some more of the lesser bowls where we don't see that come into play too much as far as the professionals and also, you know, perceiving, you know, some teams that are going to be motivated to play in the bowl game. So I picked and choose my spots there. And also, like we just mentioned, a couple of my plays are right around key numbers. I thought, you know, the perceived, you know, let's talk about the LSU bet. I mean, just understanding the market, you know, LSU has won, you know, in their last seven games, they're 6-1 straight up, 7-0 against the number. Notre Dame, 0-4 against the number last four games. The public's going to see that throughout the course of bowl season, and LSU's going to get most of play. Now, the question that's out there and people have asked me, you know, Darius Geis, will he play or will he not? I want to take the value, at least as it is, the information that I know right now. And, you know, that's what I did. The information I know right now, what are my bets? I'm going to make them. Now, if things change, then I'll hedge back. I mean, that's, to me, no different than betting and why I went down to the win each and every Sunday and bet numbers. You know, doesn't mean I didn't hedge back throughout the course of the week. Maybe a late weather report affected thing. Maybe a late injury in practice affected something. So I pretty much took the same approach that I did throughout the course of the season. Bet some early numbers that I thought would move in the market, trying to get the best of numbers. If I got to hedge back, I'll hedge back.
And I like that. And I also think, too, I mean, I don't want to disrespect the process that Brian has. He's obviously been successful doing this for 25, 30 years. It's one thing to want to read up on motivation. And I totally get that angle, and I fully respect that and appreciate that. I think in a lot of instances, too, though, you can kind of figure out motivation based on the situation for these teams, whether it's the place they're playing, whether it's playing for an interim head coach, a guy that they want to play for, a guy that you figure they probably don't want to play for. Like, take Florida State, for example. I know that you were thinking that the line would come back down with Derwin James being out, and maybe it eventually will. Maybe that is a game that will slide down that way. But, you know, you look at a team like Florida State playing here in Shreveport, Louisiana, in the Independence Bowl, not a game that they're going to get excited about, but the players seem to unanimously love the interim head coach, Odell Haggins. That, to me, is why this game's moved up from 14 to 15.5. I mean, from a power rating standpoint, sure, Florida State probably is a little more than a 14-point favorite. The odds makers put this number up expecting a little bit of uncertainty. But because Florida State wants to play for that guy, you figure they come with an effort. And if they come with an effort, Southern Miss can't play with them because Florida State's just a far more athletic team. And I think you kind of see that a little bit out here in the marketplace where you have some of these games. You know, Louisville and Mississippi State is another one. I really don't think Mississippi State's going to be all that excited to play for interim Greg Knox that they have down there. Dan Mullen's gone. Defensive coordinator Todd Grantham's gone. Top two offensive assistants are gone. That number goes from 5 to 6.5 or 7. I don't know if that's necessarily a power ratings move. In fact, I don't think it is. I think it's just on the expectation that Mississippi State doesn't want to play for that guy. So, I mean, if more comes to light that they're not that invested, then this number is going to go to 7 or 7.5. I think you can still grab a number like that now, maybe not knowing everything there is to know about the game.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'll just come out and say it. Louisville's my biggest bet of the entire season, of the entire college football season. I just, pure power rating, you know, when I bet it, it was right on the money, you know, right around 5.5, 6. I bet it actually 5. To me, it was just a pure, I mean, you talked about, you know, the coaches being gone, Dan Mullen, the defense coordinator, a couple of the assistants. How about the quarterback, Fitzgerald, gone for Mississippi State? And on the flip side, yes, I guess, you know, you could say that Lamar Jackson, there's a chance that he might not play, but every article I read the last couple of weeks of the regular season says he's going to play the bowl game. He hasn't even decided if he's going to leave yet. He will leave, But the fact that he's just saying, hey, I got to go through a process after the bowl game and decide what I'm going to do, to me, there was only one way that line was going to go, and that was right up to 7. And I'm not afraid to say on the show that and if you get my newsletter, you'll see that ticket, one of my biggest bets that I have made this entire college football season. And that's a great thing about the Bulls is it's that one time a year where you legitimately can have a team that wants to be there, that wants to finish the season strong. And on the flip side, you got a team that doesn't want to be there, could care less. They're just playing out the season. That just went into why Louisville is one of my biggest bets I've made.
And that kind of leads to another unique discussion. And I like to have this chat with you because you are somebody that got your start as a handicapper. You know, you worked for Phil Steele at North Coast, and you were doing a lot of the preview stuff and the digging stuff and helping to put together the magazine. So you were handicapping games. And then we've talked about this on the show before, but over the last year and a half that you've been out in Vegas, you've become more of a better. And that's a much, much different mindset, a more aggressive mindset, a higher risk tolerance. I know you're playing a lot of these bowl games early. Like you said, you've hit 10 or 12 numbers, something like that. Are these all client plays as well so far, or are these, you know, personal plays where you're going to evaluate it a little bit more to see if you want to send it out to clients?
Yeah, probably less than half are client plays. And keep in mind, they know who I am here at multiple places. By the time, you know, I bet that line moves a half point. And by the time, I swing back to do a write-up and type of stuff, and here's the thing. I mean, I do have a large enough following, and I'll call myself completely. I am completely selfish when it comes to it. I want to get down first. I mean, I'm sorry. That's why I moved to Vegas. I want to bet first. If I'm releasing plays before I bet, then I'm the one that's losing that extra half point. So, no, a few of them. Yeah, I did give out, you know, after I bet them, I did give out a lot of the plays that I've done, but not always the case. A lot of times, I do a Sunday night owl update, and by the time I get – the win will move a half point to a point after, I bet. I mean, that's just a fact. After I made bets this year, they'll move them a half point to a point. So, that's not always the case. Let's take, for example, a Notre Dame -6 or -7 ticket, at a Golden Nugget in the offseason against Temple. After I made the bet, it was 7, and by the time – I got home and stuff like that and texted a couple other people here in Vegas. The line was like 8 or 9. So, unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's just something, it helps my personal bankroll. And I wish everyone out there would have the same opportunities I would. I can ensure myself almost a winning season every year if that was the case. But, it's the big thing that I've struggled with, the difference between being a bettor and a handicapper. And I think each season that goes by, it's a hell of a lot tougher to be a handicapper because the market is in constant flux. And heck yeah, you can release a pick at a number at 6. The reality to this day, though, is most of the guys that are betting aren't doing until game day. And, that value is pretty much gone. And we haven't talked about it yet, but sometimes there's value on plays you weren't even thinking about all week long that come on game day. But as a handicapper, it's tough to, on game day, start releasing plays that weren't even in your thought process throughout the course of the week. So the days of, betting with the local bookie, I get it, on game day and that's your only out. Those days are very – you got to reset your expectations because the chances are you're just not going to win long term. If that's – you got to have multiple outs. We talk about it all the time. And preferably have outs that you can bet, at any time during the day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether it be an offshore place or not, you got to have multiple outs and be able to bet whenever those picks are released.
All right, let me ask you about this then. We've seen some initial line movement here based on some of the openers and all the things that are going on right now. When do you think that we see another collection of movements? I mean, people are out there playing power ratings out there right now. They're playing motivation angles, that type of thing. Do you feel like we kind of see things settle down a little bit and then maybe we get a big flurry of activity here over the next several days? What do you think, in terms of time frames for when other people want to enter the market?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I think they're stagnant now for probably even throughout the course of the weekend, unless obviously major news breaks down on a coach or a player or whatnot on an individual game-by-game basis. But I think the guys that are power ratings guys that got involved have gotten involved now. There isn't much to be had now. I think the totals are more likely to move than the sides at this point since the totals got released a day or two late. But I also think people are standing pat with regards to the totals because, you know, there's weather factors. You hope not weather factors with them. That's why you play in warm weather climates. But, yeah, I think as far as, you know, you got to hit a number right now. I don't think there's going to be too much line movement. And I'm talking for the next – forget day or two. I'm talking for the next week or so. The next set of line movements we'll get is probably on them early games. There's those five bowl games next Saturday. I think as the public gets involved late next week into those, that's when we'll see some more line movement and some of those other early bowl games. But unless there's late-breaking news, you're not going to see too much. The guys that wanted to bet early in this process – bet, and that's what, and we've seen a lot of line moves on in that regard. But other than that, we're not going to see it until we get closer to game days on these individual bowl matchups.
Well, and this is definitely my favorite time of the year when it comes to college football, because like I wrote about in that power ratings piece, it's one of the rare times where I feel like we have a legitimate, well-defined edge over the sports books, because we can play some of those intangible, unquantifiable elements, and they're just putting up numbers based on the power ratings, and they let us decide, you know, what motivation is out there for these teams, what it means to play for an interim head coach, that type of thing. So I love this time of year, and I think that it's something that, you know, a lot of us can have significant amounts of success with if we pay close attention to the details that are out there. So, Brad, let's talk a little bit of NFL. You know, the NFL season, as I talked about already, it's been a frustrating and challenging year in a lot of respects. I'm sure for you it's been one of those where you kind of just – sit back and sort of wonder, you know, why are all the favorites covering? Why is this something that's happening to me here this year? Do you feel like maybe we see kind of a regression to the mean late in the year? Or do you feel like it's one of those things where, because we've got, you know, so many bad teams and such an obvious split between good and bad, maybe it's just not going to level off?
No, I think we see a regression towards the mean, or at least we see extra value come in on the dogs. And here's my thinking. Public betting has had great success with a lot of these favorites. The books already anticipate that the public money is going to come in on these teams like the Philadelphias, the New Englands, and whatnot. And they're already, when they're setting up the and opening up these lines, they're probably already shading towards the favorite a half point or a point or so, knowing that the public's going to steam and the public's beating them. And the public still, they don't – and one of the greatest lines I've ever heard, and I think Jimmy Vaccaro was the originator of this line, you know, the public bets teams, not numbers. Sharps bet, you know, numbers. The public doesn't matter what the number is on some of these teams. They're going to continue to bet it. I think after, what, a six-week stretch where the favorites were hitting, what, like 67%, to me, tendency is going to be you're going to get some regression towards. I mean, I had it last week where I had three – dogs, my top three plays were all dogs, all won outright, Seahawks, Jets, and also the 49ers. I expect that to be a little bit more than norm. I'm not saying that the dogs all of a sudden are going to blindly hit 60-some percent, but if you put the gun to my head and ask me, you know, what's the preferable side here in the last three or four weeks of the season, I'm going to say that there's going to be a lot more value taking some dogs here, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised that they hit 55%. In the last 4 weeks, blindly.
Now, we're going to focus in depth on a couple of games coming up here on Sunday, but I do want to touch on this Thursday game because this has been a fascinating line to watch. I know it doesn't take a lot of money, a lot of significant money anyway, to move around below the key number of three. Crossing zero doesn't really mean too much of anything, but those that did kind of play some arbitrage on the money line here are sitting very pretty with New Orleans taking on Atlanta. Atlanta opened a 2-point favorite. We saw this number swing to the point where New Orleans was a 2-point favorite. Now on game day, Atlanta's up to 2.5 at several shops out there across the market. This is a fascinating game. It's obviously a premier game with two really good teams. Good to finally get one of these high-quality Thursday night games. But, man, this line is it's almost kind of a microcosm of the season, I think, in that you had this hot New Orleans team, this disappointing Atlanta team, money coming in on both sides, and now the sharp side – the side that, you know, a lot of us wise guy type people thought it would be all along.
Yeah, I mean, I release my newsletter each week, and a lot of times I don't get involved on the isolated Thursday games. But I wait until the weekend. It's more of the newsletter is more of a general. It's not like a VIP service. It's just standard three picks a week. Atlanta was one of the picks, plus 1.5. I didn't get the original line move on New Orleans. I think the spot here sets up beautifully for Atlanta. The game means a heck of a lot more to them. The fact that they're 7-5 must-win mode, New Orleans just swept Carolina. They can lose this game. As long as they beat Atlanta, in that home game, as long as they're taking care of business, that's the game that really means something to them. Atlanta was one of my top plays of the week, +1.5 at -2.5 now. And I get it, +1.5, -2.5 isn't your typical 4-point line move. You're not going through a lot of key numbers there, but it's pretty much the line where I expected it to be and where it was earlier in the week with Atlanta being a slight home favorite. So this is the rare case where the value, at least in my opinion, was yesterday. Value right now, to me, just isn't there. Now, if it goes to 3, you know, at that pick at 3, to me, it's New Orleans or nothing. So it is fascinating. And let's be careful, though. I've seen more often than not this year, late game money moves have not always worked out. I'll give you 3 in college football last week, and I was on one of them pretty big. You know, UMass went from like a 1.5-point dog to about a 2.5-point favorite. Didn't even come close to covering. You look at, you know, Georgia State went from a 4 to an 8-point favorite against Idaho. They lose outright. Didn't even come close to covering. So, and New Mexico State went from an 8 to a 12-point favorite last week. You know, they had to score a touchdown to win the game outright and make a bowl game. So be very careful. I've seen more often than not that this late game day steam movement has not always worked out.
No, it really hasn't. And that sort of cycles back to that college football power ratings piece I was talking about, in that, you know, sometimes the best line isn't the opening line anymore. Sometimes the best line is seeing where that game day action comes in and kind of playing against that. So, you know, we see it a lot more in college football, I think, because you just have larger line moves, the size of them far more significant in a less efficient market. But, man, this New Orleans-Atlanta game, very interesting for a lot of different reasons. All right, let's talk about this Minnesota-Carolina game here. I wonder, is this a line move that you fully agree with? Minnesota opened 1, up to 2.5 or 3. Now the 3s are at even money that are out there. Minnesota's picking up a lot of steam here over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you got to respect it, obviously. You know, they won 8 straight. They covered 7 in a row. It hasn't been fluky. They got one of the top defenses in the NFL. Case Keenum continues to play way above what we at least perceive to be his, you know, expectations and his playing level. I didn't think at any point that he was a playoff type of quarterback, but boy, he certainly does so now. Again, I think the situation for me has me leaning Carolina. They're off a tough, you know, loss 10 by 10 points on the road against New Orleans. Minnesota's playing, you know, a third straight tough game for them, and a third straight road game for them after playing the Lions on Thanksgiving. Atlanta last week, another big travel spot for them. Yeah, if I got a 3, Carolina definitely is on the card, and, you know, possibly even a premium pick, although it looks like, you know, a lot of those 3s are getting picked off in the marketplace.
And this is one of those games that kind of illustrates what I was talking about at the beginning when we transitioned over to the NFL here, in that, you know, this is the type of spot that you love to play. This is the type of contrarian situation that you want to look to back, where Minnesota's getting a lot of steam. Carolina's still a solid team and also a pretty good defense. But, you know, these are the spots that have been difficult to you know, pick up winners on this season. So hopefully this one does play out in your favor if you wind up on the Carolina side. I don't have any financial interest in this game, but, you know, it is one of those that does sort of illustrate the points that we're talking about a little bit here when it comes to the NFL. All right, let's talk about game 129-130. Dallas takes on the New York Giants. Dallas opened a 6-point road favorite, which I thought was kind of high to begin with. Obviously, the market agrees here with the number coming down to 4. But the big X factor and wild card in this game is the Giants going to battle without Ben McAdoo. And Ben McAdoo is a guy that has made some very suspect decisions this year, none worse than benching Eli Manning. That one even pissed me off, and I'm not a Giants fan. Manning back in the saddle, Steve Spagnuolo, your interim head coach here, Giants +4. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what you get, the beauty of Vegas is, you know, the Cowboys are a public team. You get 4.5 here in Vegas at most places right now. Giants clearly to me are the right side. You know, this is one where it's addition by subtraction. Get McAdoo out of there. I think the team will play very well for Spagnuolo with Eli Manning behind center. That's also an advantage. And another advantage, Dallas off a misleading blowout win over the Redskins. People are like, oh, Dallas is back. Finally got that win first time without Elliott in the lineup. But, I mean, that was a misleading final to say the least. They benefited from a 4-0 turnover advantage in that one. I like the Giants a lot here. fully completely agree with the line move on here. Four or above, and obviously shop around, try to get a 4.5 if you can. But this is one where I wouldn't be a bit surprised Giants just go and win the game outright. That will be a charged atmosphere there without McAdoo, and look for Eli Manning to get a heck of a big-time reception as well. That's to me, one of my favorite plays of the week. I'm taking the Giants, and that is one where I will get involved.
Is 4-05 good enough for you, or do you feel like you can hold out for 4.5? Do you think we see another one in the offshore market?
I really don't think you do. 4-1, that's tough. I still lean Giants. Do we see a 4.5? No, I don't think we do. I think that, and obviously, and here's a great point to make, and I know you make it a lot. Boy, it's easy to see this. Keep in mind the square shops here in Vegas. If you want to be more on the sharper side, look at those higher limit places like your Pinnacle and see where the line is. This is one of those key games that's telling you that the Giants is a smarter play. Having most local shops here in Vegas dealing 4.5 when your Pinnacles and some of your bigger limit books are dealing 4-1, -105. Even at that number, I'm leaning with the Giants. Again, I think they have a great chance of winning the game outright.
Yeah, and if you look out there in the offshore market now as we're recording this around 11:30 Eastern time on Thursday, the Cowboys are 4-102 at Pinnacle, 4-101 at the offshore exchange matchbook where you can trade numbers back and forth. That's the lowest juice on Dallas out there in the market. Everywhere else, -10, -15. So that gives you an idea here that the Giants are the sharp side in this spot. And again, an indication that we probably won't see 4.5 like Brad was just talking about there. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, buddy?
Yeah, I talk about it each and every week. It is the Powers Picks newsletter. And if you want to see what I bet specifically already in the bowl season, I just go ahead and print all my tickets up, put them right up there in this week's issue. And also we got a detailed write-up on the Army-Navy game, all of the 16 NFL games that we've already discussed. One of the picks, Atlanta, but there's two more picks there as far as star-rated picks and game write-ups on every single game. Power ratings, early lines on a lot of the bowl games, and a heck of a lot more. If you want to just buy this week, it's $15 for the Powers Picks newsletter. If you want to sign up for the rest of the season, both college and pro, get a star-rated pick on every single bowl game. I'm not afraid this time of year to be more aggressive and get involved. We're going to be watching them. It's December 20th. What else are you going to do? Let's go ahead and get involved on a Louisiana Tech, SMU bowl game. So you get a star-rated pick on every single bowl game. You're covered all the way through the Super Bowl. Costs $49. BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, I really enjoyed this discussion. And again, heartfelt thanks to you for reading the ramblings that I had to say there. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Right back at you, my friend. Take care.
Really good stuff there on today's show from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. One more guest left for this Thursday meeting edition of the show. That is the great Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today?
It's going wonderful, Adam. Thank you.
All right, well, let's start with college football here, and then we'll transition over to college basketball, talk a little bit about that on what has been a very exciting week for the sport with a lot of great games on Tuesday night, some interesting upsets last night. But again, we'll start college football here, and Brad and I had an interesting discussion. You are a little bit older than Brad and I. Brad and I are about the same age, and we talked with Brian Leonard on yesterday's show about his approach to the bowl season. So I'm kind of curious what kind of contrast we're going to get here. How do you approach the college football bowl season? Have you made any plays yet, or are you just kind of in wait-and-see mode?
No, absolutely. If your lines are out there, grab them because you're going to get some value early. There's, the opening numbers are very weak. There's so much you handicap bowl games differently than a regular season. Many, many times you have one team motivated versus non-motivated. You have some of the coaching changes. You have some of the home sites and the regions. So, I would like to go into a few specifics in those. But, starting it off is that I consider the early bowls, it's nice that the bowl games are now compacted from, the start of the bowls till January 1st. A few years ago, we had, four, five, or six bowls taking place after January 1st before the championship. Now they're compacted, and basically I look at them as the fun bowls, the Lester bowls, the teams that are excited to be there. Those are, I call, the non-New Year's Day bowls. And really, New Year's Day bowls for me, I consider New Year's Day, the Big Six bowls, those New Year's Eve bowls, basically any bowl that has a top three Power Five team or top four Power Five team playing each other. There's more time to prep. It's more of a work-related bowl. Those teams are normally in bowls and normally in this situation representing their conference. So, you know, a lot of times I like looking at dogs and overs early in the bowls. Again, a very generalization. And then favorites and unders later on. Historically, those have profited over the 50% mark.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense, and especially because early on in these bowl games, you know, you have some teams that went to that played in Miami last year or played in the Bahamas or played in Hawaii or something like that, and you know, that's very exciting, and they're happy to get back to a bowl game this year, but maybe they're playing in Boise or Shreveport or Montgomery or, you know, some kind of thing like that where, you know, it's cool to play another game, and if you're a senior, it's nice to, you know, keep playing through a couple weeks of practice and then a bowl game. But it's certainly far less exciting to be playing in one of those destinations as opposed to, you know, going and hanging out on the beach before the game. So, you know, in those fun bowls, as you called them, you have a lot of different angles in play. I think there's a lot more variance in games like that, which is why you said, you know, you like to play the dogs and unders, because a lot of times variance and chaos will lend themselves well to playing dogs and unders. And then it's more of a business type thing, you know, recruiting implications, you know, poll placement for next year. Those are the things that really matter in those later bowl games.
You know, each team is allowed their 15 bowl practices. Obviously, the teams that play them early don't get to them. But those teams that play later, again, I'm going to just generalize them as the New Year's Day bowls with your Power Five teams for the most part. When you look at their practices and you watch coaches' interviews, those first seven or eight practices have absolutely nothing to do with the bowls. They're young kids looking towards next year. It's just an extension of August practice, or it's a preface to the spring practice. So the first half of their bowls are actual work. We're talking about game planning for next year, looking at new plays, looking at personnel, looking at getting our young kids reps. So, you know, it really is a work atmosphere. These early bowls, you don't have that situation. You're going to just start game planning for your opponent because you're going to not have time to use those 15 bowl slots up. So that has a lot to do with it, just the mentality and the regimen of having more time to prep.
Simply worded question here, but it's an absolutely loaded question. What do your power ratings mean to you at this time of the year?
Well, it's just the base, and I've changed power ratings as much as, you know, as much as 6 points. And a lot of it has to do, again, with motivation, how the team started, how the team finished, and coaching. You know, right now we are looking at 2, 4, 6, 7. We are looking at 8 coaches that have been replaced that are either coaching in the bowl games or have an interim coaching. You know, 2 coaches that are getting replaced will be coaching the bowls. Arizona State let go of Todd Graham. He's staying to coach. And UCF, in a different setting, he left to take the Nebraska job, but he's also coaching. So that's one set. You have the players who love Todd Graham, who I think are going to play for him. The UCF side, I think they're still going to play because they're playing for an undefeated season and you're playing, you know, an SEC team. But then you get into some other situations where you have Florida State, Mississippi, Oregon, and SMU. You have 4 interim coaches because your coach left you. You know, you signed on there at Oregon because Taggart was your head coach. Now he left. You have Mario Cristobal being the interim, and you have no head coach in waiting yet because it just happened. SMU, the same thing. He leaves. Jeff Traylor is the interim. At Mississippi State, you do know Joe Moorhead's going to be your coach. Are you excited about that? Well, if you follow Penn State and you're a quarterback or a receiver, you may be excited. And then again, the Florida State situation, you know who your coach is now, but you have the interim. And then the last case are the 2 coaches where, you know, Texas A&M and UCLA, your coach got fired. Now, I remember the Baylor game last year. Baylor struggled. They won their first six games. They lost their last six. Matt Rhule was in the press box watching. Matt Rhule had actually run a couple practices with the teams. They were excited about playing for him. I can imagine that Texas A&M and UCLA, although they'll have interims with Jeff Baines and Jed Fish, you know, when you have Jimbo Fisher and Chip Kelly looking down from the press box, knowing you're going to play for those two guys next year, I think in those instances, your interim, your kids will be excited, and you'll get big performances out of those guys.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've liked to do is try to handicap those interim head coaches, and I've got a big piece over at bangthebook.com on how they've fared since the 2003-04 season. Some of them have gotten the job, some of them have not, and they haven't been the head coach for a game since. But that's always such an interesting thing to look at. And that's one of those where, you know, I do like to take a minute, take a step back, and see how the players are responding. And what's really nice is that, you know, again, I talk about this all the time on the show. I hate Twitter in a lot of ways, but I also love Twitter in a lot of ways. And you have these team-specific blogs or these team-specific beat writers writing up articles about, you know, how the players are reacting on social media to some of these things. You know, the players seem to be very upset with Willie Taggart kind of leaving them hanging. But then there's also this sentiment of players. It's like, well, we love Mario Cristobal. We want Mario Cristobal to be our head coach. If Mario Cristobal has a chance at being the head coach, I think Oregon comes out motivated as can be for the Las Vegas Bowl. If they've hired somebody prior to that and the guys know that Cristobal is not going to be the guy, well, at that point, you really need to reevaluate your stance on Oregon. And I get the move on Oregon because with Justin Herbert as the starting quarterback, they've been a much, much better offensive team. So I understand moving from 5 to 7.5 or 8, like the number that's out there now. But, you know, if they're going to play for Cristobal, I think 7.5 might be a little bit low. If they're not going to have a guy to play for because they're going to have hired somebody already, I don't know what the Ducks look like. So those interim situations are true unknowns in some cases, but in other cases, you know, I think the players make it pretty clear what they're going to do.
You know, and you do, and there's always a player or two lashes out, and I think that pretty much is a microcosm of at least his unit. You know, a player usually isn't going to lash out if he's the only one on the team that has those thoughts. I mean, it occurs, but, you know, you've been through a season now. You know your teammates, you know your players, you know the situation. You know, right now with the early signing in December, I think the players are going to know sooner or later. It's not going to be a gray area. In the past, it might have been a gray area waiting to December 16th after your bowl game to see if Mario Cristobal gets the team to rally and wins. But with the early signing now in December, I think the decision's going to have to come in the next week or so because they need to get someone out there recruiting and they need to have a face in front of the program. So one way or the other, because of the change in the dates, I think they will have a decision and we'll know more about them.
So I know that you said that you've been looking at lines and trying to pick off some line value and things of that sort. Have you already entered the market then, or are you just sort of, you know, you've got some positions that you like, but you're kind of biding your time?
Well, there's certainly a couple games. I played already. And, you know, the thing I like too is, you know, we talked about totals and playing those overs early and the unders late. You'll see totals fly 4, 5, 6, 7 points. So I certainly grab the totals early and some of the sides. It depends on, you know, I'm making my line. And, again, this is, you know, going back to my North Coast days, you know, we did a double bowl issue of Power Sweep. And that really did help because, you know, we're one of the Power Sweep and North Coast Sports was one of the few publications that had every bowl done and sent out after 7 days. So, you know, this upcoming Sunday, we would send out seven, you know, all the entire bowl issue. So that helped me handicapping games, trying to look at the good and the bad from the start to the finish. So I think certainly that's one situation where I have an edge now looking at those numbers, because for all those years, this is the exact process we did.
No, and that makes a lot of sense, and that's why we're trying to get our college football bowl game previews out very early here at bangthebook.com. I think I've written up 10 of them so far, and I'm doing 24 of them, so I'm off to a pretty good head start here. I already did the two semifinal games, and now I'm kind of working my way through the early bowls, but that is very important to be able to take a deeper look here. You know, if it's the college football regular season, you've got 65, 70 games to pick from, whatever the case may be. you know, you've got some time you don't have time, really. You know, you want to play the opener. You want to do whatever you can to react to news as quickly as possible. You've got time to collect your thoughts a little bit here in the bowl season. That doesn't mean punting on these early numbers. That just means maybe you do take some positions, but you have the time to look deeper into them, decide if you want to drink the juice, decide if you want to hold your position and see if you can play back on a middle on the other side. You know, that's one of the nice luxuries that you have here during the bowl season. And, you know, it's also nice too that, you know, the way that you can separate the bowl season, you've got five games on the 16th, one on the 19th, one on the 20th, one on the 21st. You're talking about a span of, 6 days there where you've got, you know, eight games to consider. So you can segment your bowl prep, and that's so much easier than, like I said, trying to look at a full card on a Saturday. So, again, I think the bowl season just sets up really, really well for the bettors.
It does. And, you know, my main piece of advice for anyone looking to play the bowls now would be this. Again, I've repeated it several times now, but if you're looking to play any overs on any pre-Christmas Day bowls, play them now. You know, you're going to see those first bowl games. They're going to go three or two over, or you're going to get some of these crazy 55 to 54 scores, and all of a sudden the public starts gravitating towards the over. We are Joe Public. All these bowl games are on TV. Joe Public wants to bet the favorite and the over when you get to these games. So I would go ahead and certainly when you're handicapping your card, pick off any early overs that you want, play them now. And I'm sure if you don't like it at the time, you could buy it back and you may even get a nice middle out of it, but I don't think you're going to get hurt on the line. Very few of these early bowl games, the total goes down. There's a couple I'm looking at where off the top of my head, I could see, you know, I could see an Army San Diego State open higher than it should, but Rocky Long in his situation shutting down the option, extra time to prep, that would be one of those rare bowl games that I think might come down. But for the general consensus, pre-Christmas Day bowls, if you like the over, play it now.
And something I've really had a lot of success with in past bowl seasons is taking a full game position, playing that position for the first half, and then looking for that second half middle, and specifically doing that on totals where, you know, I would expect the game – You kind of want to play out how you expect these games to go in your mind. You know, a lot of times, like you talked about already, these teams that are playing the early bowl games, they spend part of their bowl practices preparing for next year. They don't do a whole lot of film study, a whole lot of planning for the opponent that they're playing. So they're just kind of reading and reacting early on, and sometimes that can be a good thing. Sometimes it can be a really bad thing. So I think you can get some edges in that respect, too. If you kind of visualize in your mind how you think the game is going to play out, you can find a first half betting angle. In the second half, maybe things slow down, maybe teams make adjustments, stuff like that. And then you can reevaluate at that point.
Yeah, and coaches, you know, coaches are there to have fun too. You're going to see them empty the playbook. If they've had trick plays in their playbook for this year and they're at a point in the second half where they're behind or close or want to open it up, coaches have as much fun calling those trick plays as a kid, so, you know, you are going to see it. One thing I want to mention early as well is, you know, make sure you're looking at the records. One of the most positive handicapping tools that I've used is when you have a 6-6 team, it's a powerful motivator at 6-6. If you finish the season 7-6 compared to 6-7 on the losing note, obviously those 6-6 bowls are playing early in the bowl season because they're not playing in the premier bowl. But it is something, again, throughout the years that you don't think that just a record can be a motivator. It's a powerful motivating tool for those teams and coaches.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's actually a game I wrote up here today where I wrote the game preview for it. And not to go off on a tangent or anything like that, but I always look for situations in the Hawaii Bowl because the Hawaii Bowl is one of those games where, you know, motivation can be very different and all the distractions of going to Hawaii. A lot of these players would never have gotten the chance to go to Hawaii, at least, you know, unless they became pros or took a honeymoon there or something like that. But to this point in their lives, they probably haven't been to Hawaii. But you get Mountain West teams in the Hawaii Bowl that go to Hawaii every other year. You also have a Fresno State team here this year in the Hawaii Bowl with 9 wins. And you talk about record and the motivation that comes along with that. If you can have a 10-win season, you can be damn sure that team wants to do that. And that may be one of the strongest plays of the bowl season for me this year would be to look at Fresno State. I don't know if Fresno State's a better team than Houston. I'm not entirely sure. And I know from a power rating standpoint, you know, it's a game that I do have Houston -4, which is a little bit higher than the number that's out there. But what I do know is that Houston's going to Hawaii. Fresno State goes to Hawaii all the time. And Fresno State can get to 10 wins. And that's kind of one of the – that's sort of a microcosm to me of the bowl season where – from a power rating standpoint, I have something different than what I'm thinking, and I'm far more likely to go against the power rating in the bowl season.
Yeah, you know, again, I home edge, you know, I break it out. I have four different categories that I look when I'm handicapping where a bowl is and the teams that are playing. Obviously, home site. Now, home site you would think is automatically a home edge. I don't always think that's the case, but this year there's four home teams, which is an incredible amount. FAU is hosting Akron, Navy's hosting Virginia, Miami of Florida hosting Wisconsin, and Memphis against Iowa State. Now, you know, all of those, I give Navy, I give FAU a home edge because, you know, Navy knows they're going to play there if they get to a certain level. Army knows where they're going to play if they get to a certain level. FAU, obviously, just the newness of it all. But the Miami of Florida, I don't give them their regular home edge because Wisconsin's going to be excited to go to the Orange Bowl. Wisconsin's going to be excited to go to South Beach, and they will travel and they will sell every possible ticket, and you're going to have the Miami edge. Now, granted, you're still going to have the Miami music. You're going to have the Miami DJ. You're going to have the familiarity, so you have some edge. And the Memphis game, you know, I don't know if Memphis is excited to be at home. I haven't gone through the reading yet to see, but you got to believe that this team – you know, was challenging to be the conference champion and perhaps getting to a BCS bowl. Now you're playing Iowa State at home. You know, we'll see what happens in that. The other ones are in-state bowls. You know, in the Big 12, the bowls pick the teams. They do it a little differently. So once Oklahoma went, Oklahoma State, you know, the Alamo Bowl gets the next choice. They pick their team. And the Texas Bowl picked the 6-6 Texas team over a 7-5 Kansas State and Iowa State team. So you have a Texas who obviously you would think they're not excited to be in the Texas Bowl because they're the Longhorns, but they haven't been to a bowl. Herman has turned them around. I think they're excited. Winston-Salem is only 77 miles from Charlotte. So I think Wake Forest, now you're playing in an NFL stadium. You're playing in-state. You're going to have a good crowd, which is rare for Wake Forest games. So, again, Wake Forest is another one of those in-state areas that you look at. Familiarity, as you said, Fresno went to Hawaii on November 11th. 3 games ago, they were just at this venue. Now they're turning around and playing again. And another one that I just noted was Boise plays at UNLV last year and every other year. So that's familiarity. And then the last is regions. You know, when you get to that Potato Bowl and you're playing up in Boise, you know, I think with Wyoming has an edge up there. They're playing in the altitude. They're playing in the cold. It's a regional situation where you have the old WAC and the Mountain West and those areas. So, you know, I look at all those, the home sites, the home regions, the familiarity, and the in-states. And then I add or subtract those from my power ratings as I'm going through as well.
And one more I would add that we talked about on Tuesday with Alex Nicholas from Minor Rush is Marshall and Colorado State, with Colorado State playing down in Albuquerque in the altitude, over 5,000 feet above sea level. They're used to that. They play in New Mexico every other year, you know, and Marshall doesn't. And Marshall has a very long travel from Huntington, West Virginia. So that's another one that kind of falls into that regional element and that familiarity that you were talking about. All right, Rolf, let's transition over to college basketball here for a few minutes. And I want to talk about processing huge wins for teams. You know, we saw Washington beat Kansas last night. We saw Loyola Chicago knock off Florida, which was a big time surprise. But then we also saw some, you know, we've seen some top 25-esque matchups here. You know, we saw Wichita State play very well against Baylor, then struggle a little bit with South Dakota State. Villanova blew out Gonzaga at Madison Square Garden. Arizona knocked off Texas A&M. You know, so you've got some of these really big games that happen here in the non-conference. How do you process them? Because I have to think that, you know, there's some built-in recency bias a game, two, three games after, you know, those marquee matchups.
Well, you know, again, each game is different. You know, let's take the Kansas game, for example. you know, Kansas was off Syracuse, and Washington just had a few extra days to prep, and Washington pulled out a zone defense that they'd never used last night. Kansas was only 5 of 20. Kansas was playing not at their home court. They were playing at their offsite where they play the Big Ten. They're only 3-4 there in the regular season. You have unfamiliarity. You know, they've got the normal court edge because it was basically a home neutral game. But it was just a Washington team that pulled out a defense they hadn't played this year, played a different zone than Syracuse, which Kansas prepped for, and executed it perfectly. So that's just a case where a team deserved to pull the upset because of the way they prepped and prepared. You know, Villanova and Gonzaga doesn't surprise me. I have Villanova one of the top teams, and you know, people thought Gonzaga would be down this year, and they started off very well, and they had a couple big wins and they had a couple big losses. But you know, Villanova is just a superior team that can press, has more depth, and you know, and to me, Villanova. I have Wichita State as my number one team in the country, and I have Villanova number two and Michigan State number three. So right now, those would be my three number one seeds moving forward. And I think they are the most talented, and the thing they all have in common is their top 20 defenses and top 20 offenses, even top 10 in both categories. Florida has the talent. Florida has potential to be a number one seed at the end of the year. Florida can easily win the SEC, but Florida has struggled. You look at what they've done. I mean, they beat Gonzaga in double overtime. That was 4 games ago. They lost to Duke. Again, they played a good game. Then they got crushed against Florida State, 83-66. And in those 5 games, including the Loyola loss, they've been out-rebounded in 4 of those 5 games by at least 5 boards. They're not shooting well. They've shot 42% in 4 of their last 6 games. Their defense, they allowed 50% to Loyola, and that's a game where Florida is a little overrated. I wasn't that surprised at that. I have Loyola as my number 65 team in the country, so it wasn't a shocker, but Loyola had to shoot 52% in that game. So, you know, if you're looking at the upsets, you know, why are they getting beat? Florida easily can lose to Cincinnati again on Sunday. They could lose a fourth straight game, and it wouldn't shock me at all. And, you know, we talked about Washington beating Kansas and Gonzaga losing to Villanova. Well, this Sunday, Gonzaga travels to Washington, and I think they'll right the ship getting the win, and Washington will be off a loss again come Sunday.
I think what's so important is, you know, in a vacuum, a game is a game. I mean, whatever happens, happens. If you have a ridiculous shooting performance from three, you're going to pull off some upsets. If a team shoots really badly from three, you're going to lose games that you probably shouldn't. You know, sometimes you're going to get thrown a curveball, like you mentioned with Kansas there, seeing that zone defense. But I think what I want to focus on here is how our listeners should process, how our listeners should react to this. We'll use Villanova as an example here. Villanova played a pretty good mid-major team in Northern Iowa, knocked them off by 14, played a couple regional games against inferior competition, played Penn and St. Joe's, blew both of them out in those games. Then they step up for this big game against Gonzaga, and they win it by 16 at Madison Square Garden. Long trip for Gonzaga as well, so it wasn't really an ideal situation for them. Then Gonzaga plays an early tip here on Saturday against LaSalle, or on Sunday, I should say, against LaSalle. And that's kind of the game that I would have circled. You know, what's happened to this point is what it is. They played regional games. They showed that we're dominant in the region. And they'll have another one here against Temple coming up next week. But that's the spot that I want to isolate, the spot that I want to key in on. You know, what is sort of your determining factor for looking for a letdown or a bounce back with a team, you know, when they go from playing a top 15 opponent like Gonzaga to playing a team like LaSalle, who's a lot like the teams that they've blown out recently?
Well, you know, to me, I look at Villanova and I'm very impressed. Now, they've only played one top they've only played two top 75 teams. They beat Tennessee by 9 and they beat Gonzaga by 16. But when you're playing Tennessee and then Northern Iowa in a neutral setting, when you knock off Penn by 28 and knock off St. Joe's by 39, The Philadelphia five is huge. I mean, you have Penn, you have St. Joe's, you have LaSalle, you have Temple, and you have Villanova. You're getting those four teams' best shots. And that impressed the heck out of me that they could go and handle Penn and St. Joe's that easily. I think they'll handle LaSalle no problem. I think they actually lose their first game when they go to Temple next Wednesday, December 13th. I love the way Temple's playing. And that game is actually at the Palestra. So, you know, it's a game I'm looking for that I'll look to fade Villanova. And I'm not going to just fade them because of the situation, obviously. If Villanova does what they did against LaSalle and Temple doesn't show anything to me, it's just a game I'll probably pass unless Temple's getting a touchdown or more. But, you know, I look at it that, yes, they were inferior foes, but those inferior foes in Philadelphia are just gunning for this team, and they still couldn't do anything against them, and that impresses me.
Let's talk about an altogether different set of circumstances. Then let's talk about Ball State. Ball State, a team expected to do a little bit here in the MAC conference, at least based on what they've done in the non-conference so far. You know, blown out by Oklahoma on the road, lost a close one to Dayton to start the year, blown out by Oregon on the road. You know, they've played some pretty tough games. They played a pretty tough road schedule in the non-conference so far. Earlier in the week, they knock off Notre Dame. And you kind of sit there and look at that game and say, okay, you know, what happened? What sort of crazy outlier is there in this game for Ball State to wind up winning? Well, if you look at the box score, there aren't any. Notre Dame shot 48%. Ball State shot 46%. Notre Dame was a tad better from three. Ball State only hit two more three-pointers than Notre Dame while taking seven more. Ball State had more turnovers than Notre Dame. So when you look at a performance like that where you don't see any clear reason why Ball State was able to win this game, you know, how do you evaluate Ball State going forward with games against Valparaiso here on Friday or on Saturday, North Florida with a 10-day break? Now, how do you evaluate a spot like that where, you know, a team just outright beat somebody? They didn't get lucky, wasn't a high-variance game, anything like that. They just outright beat a really good team. Does that change your perception of them, or do you still only treat that as one game?
No, absolutely I treat it as one game. It's, again, it's another regional game. It's a situation where, you had the Irish who were off the Maui Classic where they beat Wichita State back in November. Then they had a week off. They play Michigan State. And then, you know, they beat St. Francis, and then they lose to Ball State at home. So, to me, it's just one game where, you know, in basketball, again, you got to remember, you know, basketball, what, your best team's going to lose four or five games. And college football kids, we talk about how they have letdowns in college football. And that's with only a 12-game schedule, playing a game and then having a letdown and playing another game. Well, the same thing happens, you know, in Notre Dame. You've got kids starting to get ready for finals. You have games where just situations happen where the teams just don't gel. The point guard's not feeling well. You don't always know because, again, that's an outlier. That's different than, like I said, the Florida case where for three straight games they shot 42%. They got a rebound at four of their last five games. There's definite cases where I'm looking at to play against Florida. It's something to note. And if it continues on against Delaware, which I doubt it will, and then they play Indiana, it's something to keep a mental aspect moving forward. But to me, it's one game. And when I have a quality team that's off a bad performance, you know, the first thing in my mind is let's look to see if we have a reason to play on them. And that is one of those situations where I think the line will probably be a little too high for me for the Irish to go on the road and play Delaware in a unique road game for them. But quality teams off a loss is something you always have to be prepared to play on.
Well, and the reason I wanted to talk about this is because we talk about recency bias, we talk about perception bias, we talk about overreaction. You know, in college football, these upsets are very, very highly publicized. In college basketball, with the sheer number of teams, sometimes they don't get as much run as they should. And Ball State knocking off Notre Dame didn't really seem to get a ton of run, at least relative to Washington beating Kansas and Loyola Chicago beating Florida. So I'm always intrigued by that in college basketball when you don't have to wait a week to get back on the floor. You might play 2 days later, or you're going to play 4 days later. You know, so that's something that always interests me, and I kind of want to get your thoughts in terms of, you know, how much overreaction there is to stuff like that.
Well, you know, Ball State's one of the, what, the top four or five teams in the MAC. And, you know, it could just be that, you know, we also know in this area that the MAC can play some good basketball. You know, MAC upsets aren't that unusual. I mean, the Washington upset to Kansas, to me, is 10 times the story of, you know, of a Ball State upset to Notre Dame. When you have these in-state little brothers looking up to big brothers, you're always going to give them your best shot, and big brothers always not prepared like they can be in football.
All right, so you mentioned finals. You mentioned maybe that's something that did serve as kind of a distraction for Notre Dame, and that can be a very significant distraction because when you talk about ineligibility in college basketball, it's kind of an epidemic in some ways where you have a lot of players that just don't make grades, can't play. This is especially a thing that happens with transfers, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of those midseason transfers that are going to get back in the lineup here as we go throughout the next few weeks. But does that change your handicapping at all, the prospect of finals, the fact that the holidays are coming up, the fact that holiday breaks are coming up for the students? Does that change the way you approach some of these games?
Oh, one.
Rolf, you still with me?
Yep, sorry about that. I hit my mute button by mistake. My apologies.
You were so excited that you muted yourself.
What 100% handicap them differently when we get to the holidays and the finals? Number one is basically my home courts get cut in half. The kids are not in school. You don't have the student section, and you just don't have the same enthusiasm when kids aren't on campus. You got, you know, some of these kids are now moving into a Christmas dorm. They're there. Routines are changing. So it's important to know when the schools break, because some schools break at different times. And I spend this week and next week going through and trying to look at when those breaks are, when the kids are out of school, and what the situations are. Finals, again, very stressful. You have, you know, and we should mention this in the bowls too. You know, with finals coming up now, we're going to see a slew of people ineligible for the bowl games, because once they don't pass their classes now, those bowl games, they'll be ineligible. So always keep an eye on the suspensions and the bowl games as well as in the college basketball card.
All right, so what are you looking at for this weekend? Is there anything that stands out to you in terms of plays that maybe you've made for tonight or plays that you're looking to make here over the weekend?
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and do the same thing as we did last week. We'll give those people listening live or that are listening on Thursday, we'll give them a Thursday night's best bet, and then we'll do one for Saturday as well. You know, we talked about Ball State, and we talked about Indiana, and we talked about Little Brother and Big Brother. Well, tonight at 6:30 on FS1, I'm going to go ahead and take Valpo plus the points against Purdue. Valpo is a quality team that has played a very weak schedule this year because of their move in the conference. They moved out of the Horizon to the Missouri Valley. So while they're 8-0, it's not that impressive of an 8-0. But when I look at what they've done, that impresses me. They're allowing 34% from two-point range, 25% from three-point range. And while they only return one starter, which is something I'm not going to play on, you know, usually, you know, they have an Oklahoma State transfer in Joe Burton, who was on the team last year, had to sit out. They have Baker's Eugene, a Nebraska transfer, who sat out. They have the pedigree being a three-time Horizon regular season champion. And then you look at what Purdue has done. They played Arizona in a neutral setting. They played Louisville. They went to Maryland, and they went to Northwestern. So the Big Ten wanted to start playing some games earlier this year to get the teams used to it. Next year, the Big Ten is going to go to a 20-game conference schedule. They'll be the first to do that, which is very unique. So to get the teams acclimated, this year they scheduled them early in the year, and then you have non-conference games in between, and then you have more conference games. Next year that won't be the case. It'll be straight conference games. So very, very, again, unique situation for the Big Ten, but awful win at Maryland, a tough game against Northwestern. Now you have Little Brother, a 6:30 start, and I like Valpo for tonight.
I do want to ask you about this in terms of Valparaiso. Like you said, they haven't really played much of a schedule yet. And like you said, part of that tied to the fact that they've changed conferences. I think a lot of people probably expected this team to drop off a little bit with Bryce Drew going down to Vanderbilt. And obviously, it's been a very, very slow start for Vanderbilt. But how do you approach those teams that simply promote an assistant coach? I mean, how much of an adjustment do you make for them?
Well, to me, when you have a bloodline like Butler and Valpo, it's worked, you know, and I prefer that situation. So, you know, you have a mid-major who has a process. Their process is recruit couple local kids, get couple transfers, be very successful at what you do. The system works. It's a plug-and-play system that continues to work year in and year out. So for me, I upgrade them more. Again, having only one starter back, it's normally not a situation I play on early in the year. But again, this is a veteran one-starter team. You had, later in the year last year, they had some injuries and some banged up, and some of these guys who are now starting had significant minutes down the stretch. So, again, it's a little bit of a unique situation. The card's sort of light tonight, but I think defensively they slow the pace. I think what Purdue just came off of in that four-game stretch, I like the spot again. And it's will they pull the upset? I don't know that. But would it surprise me? And no, I'd put it in the exact same category as Ball State and Notre Dame.
And just to be clear, I should have clarified my question. Matt Lodich, who took over for Bryce Drew before last year, I should have clarified, because one of the things I find interesting in both college football and college basketball is that a lot of times somebody steps in with the previous head coach's recruits, and there's already established built-in talent there. It's that second and third year when some of that talent starts to graduate that, you know, maybe things change a little bit. So I should have prefaced that question a little bit better than I did, and maybe we'll talk more about teams in that particular situation as we go throughout the rest of the college basketball season. But, Rolf, what about this weekend? What are you looking at there?
Well, you know what? The Shockers have been good to us. I told you they're my number one team already, and I'm going to go right back to them. They're at Oklahoma State. I figure they'll be laying about a touchdown. Oklahoma State with a first-year head coach this year. Cowboys have played the number 346 schedule of the 351 teams. We're talking Cupcake City. They've played one team in the top 150, and they lost A&M. They've only played two teams in the top 250. Wichita State beat Baylor last Saturday, a best bet winner for us here. And then what happened? Well, they had their letdown against South Dakota State. Good teams, even in a letdown role, they were laying 18.5. They still won by 10. Set the perfectly for us. Now, in the last 2 years, Wichita State has gone 30-2 at home. One of those losses last year, and their only loss of last year, was to this Oklahoma State squad. Shockers will be ready. Shockers get revenge for their lone home loss of last year, and they take it to Oklahoma State. And again, it basically is another little brother, big brother. It's a lot closer than Ball State and Notre Dame, but the Big 12 is still the Big 12.
And that game coming up here, 4:00 Eastern time on ESPN2 from Stillwater. Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. What do you got going on over there right now, man?
If you go to WagerTalk.com, go to the handicappers page and go to Cal Sports. The NBA stat sheet is up daily. It gives you year-to-date, last 2 weeks stats, average line, average score, free best bet daily. Those best bets now 14-5. And for bowl people, the entire gridiron guide, you have one sheet, one matchup sheet per bowl, all 39 bowls up and available now. WagerTalk.com, go to the Cal Sports page.
You can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, WagerTalk.com, thank you so much for your time, man. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Really strong stuff here on today's show. Two very smart minds that I respect greatly in Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Westgate Super Contest selection segment. Joe Everett forced to join me here again this week after I went 4-1 in the Super Contest last week. Then we'll also have this week's version of the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.